Looking forward to just sharing with you what the Lord has laid on my heart tonight. There was a preacher who was preaching, and he noticed somebody in the audience fell asleep. And as he looked out, he called out to the person sitting next to him and said, "Would you please wake them up? Would you just nudge them real quick, wake them up? The other got to hear what we're talking about." And the person who he asked to wake him up shouted back to the preacher and said, "I didn't put him to sleep. You put him to sleep. You wake him up." So hopefully he got a nap. Hopefully he got a nap this afternoon, but I won't be calling out for anybody to wake you up. But hopefully he got a good afternoon nap. I know I got a good short one, and then you know, you all hear whenever a youth pastor gets up to preach. Somebody just told me right before the service, when a youth pastor gets up to preach, they're supposed to keep it short and interesting. And if you can't keep it interesting, at least keep it short. Well, at least I am short, so I don't know that I'll keep it short, but at least I am short. But Exodus 14, we are talking about tonight, forward by faith when there is no forward to go. Going forward by faith when it seems like there's nowhere to go. I'm sure all of you have heard the phrase, "between a rock and a hard place." There's a book out there titled "Between a Rock and a Hard Place." I have not read it, but I have heard the story. And it's about a man who is it's really an extraordinary survival story. It's told by a man named Aaron Ralston. And it tells about his account of being trapped in one of the most remote spots in America and how one inspired act of bravery brought him home. It started out as a simple hike in Utah, the Canyonlands, on a warm Saturday afternoon. For him, a 27-year-old mountaineer and outdoorsman, a walk into the remote Blue John Canyon was a chance to get a break from a winter of solo climbing Colorado's highest and toughest peaks. He was a pretty, you know, avid hiker, a pretty avid wilderness kind of explorer kind of a guy. And he'd earned this weekend vacation, and by early afternoon of his hiking, he found himself exactly where he wanted to be, entirely alone, with just the beauty of the natural world all around him. It was about 2:41 p.m., 8 miles from his truck in a deep and narrow slot canyon. He was climbing down off of a wedge boulder when the rock suddenly and terrifyingly came loose. Before he could get out of the way, the big falling boulder pinned his right hand and wrist against the canyon wall. And so began the 6 days of torment for Aaron Ralston. With scant water and little food and no jacket for the really cold nights and the terrible knowledge that he had unfortunately not told anyone where he was going, he found himself facing certain death, trapped by an 800-pound boulder 100 feet down in the bottom of a canyon. As he eliminated his escape options one by one through the days, he faced the full horror of his predicament. By the time any possible search and rescue effort would begin, he'd most probably have died of dehydration if a flash flood didn't drown him before that. You know, what does one do in the face of almost certain death? Well, Aaron Ralston got out his video recorder and he started just to talk about memories and send messages to friends and family. And then one day he had the idea of how he could escape his peril. Really, he saw no way out, and if you know the story, amazingly enough, he really amputated his own arm and hiked back out of the canyon in what is really an amazing escape story. Now, I don't know much about the book. I think there's a movie about him. I don't know a whole lot about that, but what a story. You know, what do you do when you find yourself trapped between a rock and a hard place? Now, hopefully none of you find yourself literally trapped in a rock and a hard place. But what do we do in life when it seems like there's nowhere to go or there's no answer? We're going to look tonight at a very popular historical account in the Bible about the crossing of the Red Sea. And what were the children of Israel supposed to do when it seemed like there was nowhere for them to go? And I'm excited for this year's theme, Forward by Faith. I believe that God is leading many of us in different ways to go forward by faith. Maybe it's a personal spiritual decision. Obviously, we have some things for our church that we're going to move forward in by faith in God that might put us in some positions where it seems like really there's honestly nowhere to go. We might find ourselves in places where the next step forward doesn't make any sense. Well, what do we do and how do we take the next step forward? Hopefully you're in Exodus 14, and we'll begin reading in verse number 10. And now I know we're going to read a familiar account in the Bible, one that most, if not all of us, have probably read and heard many times. I want to invite you tonight to look at this passage with fresh eyes and a fresh heart, because we're going to look at maybe some details that you haven't quite picked out before. So Exodus 14 and verse number 10. The Bible says, "And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes. And behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. And they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians, than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." What do we do when it seems like there's nowhere forward to go? But God is still leading us forward by faith. I believe, first of all, tonight, we need to focus on God and not our circumstances. When God puts us in a place of living by faith, when God invites us, like our theme this year with Romans 1:17, to take every day, to live our life each day and each moment of the day by faith and where God is leading us, we need to, first of all, focus on God, not our circumstances. Corrie ten Boom said, "Faith is like a radar that sees through the fog." I know it gets foggy here sometimes here and there, but growing up in Fresno, California, we never once had a snow day. There was never a day in my life in California where it snowed where I lived. We had to go travel a couple hours to see the snow, but we did have fog days. And on a fog day, it would get so foggy in our town that there would be a 2-hour delay for getting to school. You know, as kids, you know, we lived right behind the school, so we were walking to school, but we still didn't have to be there till 10. We thought fog days were great. You know, I didn't mind fog. I was like, man, fog is awesome. You know, I could sleep in a little bit. I could take my time getting ready for school. But since I've learned to drive and since I've started driving, I know that fog can be pretty dangerous. You're driving out on a foggy road and maybe there's not a whole lot of light around. You know, you turn on your low beams and you get to going. And what do you do when you're driving through the fog? What do you do when you can't really see very far in front of you? You set your mind really and you set your eyes on either the line on the outside or the line in the middle of the road, and you just follow whichever way the road markings lead. And you know, as we're living by faith and we see the outward circumstances that come around us and the fog begins to descend and the fog begins to come upon us and we don't know where to go, our desire and our intent should be to cast our eyes upon the Lord and follow His leading. You see, the children of Israel were finally set free from the bondage of Egypt, and now they had a long journey ahead of them. Journeys and battles and milestones and all kinds of twists and turns would befall them. But all along the way, God didn't want them focusing on the fog of their circumstances. God wasn't leading the children of Israel to focus on the enemies that they had. God didn't want the children of Israel to look at the walls of the city that they were supposed to take over. God wasn't asking the children of Israel to look at the circumstances of the wilderness around them, but rather God was teaching them before they even got to the Red Sea, instead to cast their focus on God. You know, before we pick up in this passage, God did all of these miracles to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. We think of the 12 plagues, and we think of the lice, and we think of the frogs, and we think of the darkness, and we think of all these different things that God did to set His people free. And I think about how God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Over and over and over again, it says that phrase, God hardened Pharaoh's heart, that He would not let the people go. And God would add another plague. And God would add another plague. And God would add another plague. And it was continually saying, and God hardened Pharaoh's heart, that He would not let His people go. As we know the story, finally it came to that 12th plague and the firstborn child was put to death and then by the angel. And then the children of Israel, they were pushed out of Egypt by Pharaoh. And as they go on their way, I believe God caused plague after plague after plague. I believe God hardened Pharaoh's heart time after time after time to show Israel that their focus should not be about how big their circumstances were,
but rather about how big their God is.
You know, as we focus on God, as we focus on Him instead of our circumstances, we need to focus underneath that on His miracles and not our might.
I think this is the first place the children of Israel find themselves on their journey to the Promised Land.
This is the very first stop they find themselves in. And what? The Egyptians are coming behind them, and they're looking, they're trapped by the sea, and they're supposed to remember what God has already done in their life to lead them this way.
Yeah, I'm sure if I was there, I would be thinking the same thing they probably were.
Looking back at the Egyptian army and thinking, man, there's no way we can overcome them. They have these iron chariots that have all of their weapons, and what? We don't have anything. We're just on the run. I think of looking at the Red Sea before and I think, you know, I don't have a boat to get across. I don't have a way to cross this sea. No, we in our own might have nothing.
But when they got to that point where there was nowhere to go, they should have remembered God's miracles that He had just done month and week after week after week instead of focusing on their circumstances.
Zechariah 4:6 says, "This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts." 2 Corinthians 12:9 says, "And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly therefore will I glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." You know, as we go to this and we take these steps of living by faith, according to Romans 1:17, as we move forward by faith, hopefully in our own personal lives, and as a church, there will be some times when there will be an obstacle in front of us, there will be an obstacle behind us, and it seems like there's nowhere to go. I want to encourage you, remember God's miracles instead of trusting in your own strength to get past the obstacles. As they focused on God, not only were they supposed to focus on His miracles, but they were supposed to focus on His leading and not their own learning. Look with me, if you would, at Exodus 13. And look over at verse number 17. It says, "And it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest peradventure, when the people repent, when they see war, and they return to Egypt. But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up harnessed out of the land of Egypt." And then skip down to verse 21. "And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and night." I'm encouraged by this next verse. "And he took not away the pillar of the cloud by the day, nor the pillar of fire by the night, from before the people." I asked them to put a slide up there if they would real quick. There's a map you see of their wilderness journey, and I don't know how much you could see it, but up in the top left, it has the land of Goshen. It has where they were in Egypt. And at the very top of that map, it has underneath the Great Sea, the most logical way that you would travel if you're going from Egypt to the Promised Land. You would go up underneath the Great Sea and you would go right up to where they were supposed to be on the very top right corner of the map. Underneath the very top of the Great Sea, in between the land of Goshen and the Red Sea down here on the left, what you see is another possible way to go through, right through the middle. They go through Etham and then towards Shur and up to Beersheba and Hebron, right into the Promised Land. But notice, God does not lead them to go the most logical way towards the Promised Land. Instead, God leads them down to the Red Sea, almost seemingly trapping them. Thank you. You could take that map off of there. You know, conventional wisdom says, we're leaving Egypt. So don't close yourself in by the Red Sea. You know, our own learning, our own knowledge, our own understanding says, I'm leaving Egypt, I'm going the quickest and most efficient way to the Promised Land. If you're like me, when you get ready to go on a trip, you get out your phone, you turn on your GPS, and you look for the fastest possible way to get to your destination. Why? Because that's what our own wisdom says. But God in His infinite wisdom, God in His supreme leading, led Israel not to go the most understandable way, but Him knowing that they were not ready for war with the Philistines, led them down to the Red Sea, to be trapped by the Red Sea and the Egyptians chasing them. And now to us, that doesn't make any sense.
Now us in our own mind, in our own logic, we're like, wow, that makes absolutely no sense. Why would God do that? Because God was preparing them for the journey that they were going to make to the promised land. Instead of leaning on their own wisdom and their own knowledge, to lean on the leading of God. God was leading the children of Israel every step of the way by the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. And on your journey of life, God knows every enemy that you're not ready for. God knows every battle that we can't quite handle yet. God knows every step of faith that maybe we aren't quite ready to take. And God will lead us to a place sometimes where we're at the Red Sea and the Egyptians behind us and we say, God, I'm not really sure that this is the best plan for me. God, I'm not really sure that the way you're leading me in my spiritual life, or God, I'm not really sure that the way you're leading my family, or God, I'm not really sure that the way you're leading our church is the right direction to go. God, it doesn't make sense. And sometimes I believe two things. I believe God is sometimes protecting us from something we're not ready on another path. But not only that, God is leading us for a breakthrough Red Sea moment where we have to take a step of faith, trusting in God. When you find yourself in those situations where God is leading you to take a step of faith, where God is leading you in a way that you don't quite understand, trust God's leading, not your own learning. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not on thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths. Proverbs 16, 9 says, a man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. Psalm 32, verse 8 says, I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. Going forward by faith, sometimes God leads us into some precarious situations. Sometimes God will lead us to do some things that to us and maybe to those around us don't quite make sense. But trust God's leading. If God's led, then just keep following God. I'm encouraged by that verse in verse 22 where it says, you took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people, because there will be some times where we're following God and we're in maybe the darkness of a night and we can't see as well, but God will continue to lead. I've heard the old quote, you know, don't doubt in the night what God gave you in the light. And if God has led you in a specific decision, in a specific direction, just keep going forward by faith. Don't doubt the way that God has led you. As we focus on God and not our circumstances, we need to focus on His miracles, not our might. Focus on His leading, not our learning, but also focus on His plan and not our pleasure. Did you know that before they got to the Red Sea, God told them exactly what He was going to do? Did you know that before they got to the place where they were surrounded, God told them that this was exactly what was going to happen? Exodus 14, and look at verse number 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pihahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal-Zephon, before it you shall encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, the wilderness hath shut them in, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. God told them exactly what He was going to do. God gave them exactly His plan. But you know what? It wasn't very comfortable, was it? You know, living by faith is not a comfortable thing to do. You know, taking the steps that God leads us in sometimes is not very easy. Why? That's because that's what faith is about. It's about trusting God despite our circumstances. Now, I'm sure if I was Moses and I'm sitting there and God's telling me His plan, I'm sitting there thinking, so you want us to go down here, trap ourselves, and then you want all of Egypt to chase us and surround us, and your answer is, I will receive honor and be honored upon Pharaoh and all of Egypt. If God told me that was His plan, I would be pretty confused. I'd be like, God, are you sure about this? Lord, do you really want me to be caught between a rock and a hard place? God, is this really your direction? But realize God's plan was not about the comfort of Israel. God's plan was about the glory of God. Like I said, living by faith is not about comfort. Our American culture, our American Christianity is all about comfort. It's all about what's easy. It's all about what's convenient. It's all about what's luxurious. Hey, what makes sense? What's easy as a Christian? When is it easy to go to church? When is it easy to read the Bible? When is it easy to pray? When is it most convenient for me to step out and do something new for God? Sometimes in our life it's just all about what's easy, what's fast, what's convenient. But God is not leading us to live by a faith or a way that is convenient, comfortable, and easy. No, God is leading us to live by a way that maybe at some times is definitely not comfortable, but it's going to give God glory. You know, sometimes we wish everything was easy. We wish life was comfortable. We wish some of the burdens were taken away. But that's not God's plan. Well, because God doesn't get the glory out of us doing something that's easy. Because God doesn't get praise when we just go about doing something in our own strength because it makes sense to do. No, God gets glory out of the impossible situation that to us makes no sense. But God does the impossible. And others see and they believe in the one true God. We have to focus on God. When you're in a place in your life, when you're at a step of faith and it looks like there's nowhere to go, focus on God. Not your circumstances. His miracles, His leading, and His plan. But number two tonight, focus on the path, not the possibilities. Exodus 14, and look with me at verse number 10. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness? How many of you have heard of the website called WebMD? Any of you heard about that? You know, it can be a helpful website at times. At other times, it can be really, really bad for your health, and that it can cause a lot of anxiety. For those of you that don't know what it is, WebMD is a website where you can go, and it has two things that are very dangerous. It has a search bar at the top, and it has a title that says Symptom Checker. And what you do is you either search or you click on that Symptom Checker, and it asks you all these questions, and you put in how you're feeling. And you may put in something like, you know, I'm feeling feverish, I'm feeling a little bit nauseous, my chest kind of hurts. And you're feeling, you maybe put in a few of these different things, and suddenly it pulls up all of these different articles of every possible thing that could be wrong with you. And I mean, it could be anything from like you've been dead for 2 months to your appendix is about to burst right now. But in reality, you probably just have heartburn from whatever you ate and your heater's on too high in your car. The reality of WebMD is you put in these different circumstances, the different symptoms, and it pulls up all of these different options. And what does our mind do? It goes to the worst possible case scenario. Why? I don't know why we're like that, but we are. All of us, something happens and there's an issue, there's something that doesn't quite make sense, and our mind immediately jumps to all of the endless possibilities of things that could go bad. Instead of jumping to the endless possibilities of things that could go right. You know, our God is not a worst case scenario God. Our God is not a God where He's thinking of all the possibilities of things that could go wrong. Our God is not a God that leads us to one of these situations and says, all right, good luck, have fun with all those possibilities. No, our God is a best case scenario God. As believers in an almighty and all-knowing God, we are not supposed to focus on all the ways that something can go wrong, but instead on the path that God has set before us, because that path will ultimately lead to victory. I understand. The Egyptians, the Israelites, they're in a path that really, to them, probably didn't make a whole lot of sense. They're in a place that really, to them, oh man, Lord, this is not the best idea I've ever heard in my life. But they were just supposed to trust God's plan and follow God's path instead of thinking about all of the endless possibilities. Underneath that, there is Pharaoh's pursuit and the people's plight. We read about that in verse 5. It says, and it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they go and they chase after them. And it says, he made ready his chariots and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them. You know, Pharaoh was coming. This was not just a make-believe situation. This was not something that we look back and we're like, man, why were the Israelites scared? That makes no sense. I'm sure if I were there and all I saw was the Red Sea in front of me and the dust of 600, probably over 600 chariots behind me, I would be a little bit terrified too. But we have to remember that God already gave them His plan. That God already gave them a commandment. That God already showed them that He would get glory throughout this situation. And the children of Israel were not supposed to sit there and fear for their lives. God was not telling the children of Israel to go and we're just going to see whatever happens. No, we'll hope for the best. No, God was going to get glory through the plan that He had made. And sometimes we go through times in life where God leads us to something. God leads us to take a step of faith. Maybe in our service. Maybe it's our own spiritual life. Maybe there's a decision God wants us to make. Maybe it's something with your family. Maybe it's something in our church, the way God wants you to get involved. And we think, if I do that, and we list off all of these possibilities, we think of all of the worst, instead of remembering, God said this. And if God said this, then by the grace of God, I'm going to follow His plan. You know, God had a perfect path. You know, what was God's answer to the people's plight? What was God's answer for the fear of all the Israelites? Look in verse number 13. It says, and Moses said unto the people, fear ye not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will show you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. And the Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. And we know what happens. Moses, he gets his rod and he spreads his rod out and God parts the Red Sea. You know what? God had a perfect plan. God had a perfect path. And that perfect path was, first of all, like you said in verse 13, fear ye not. Stand still. God's plan for us when we go forward by faith. God's plan for us when we take a step of faith that we don't quite understand is, first of all, to fear not. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, for God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Mark it down, the spirit of fear, as far as worry and anxiety about all the possibilities that things that could go wrong, is not from God. It's from the devil. Isaiah 41:10 says, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. You might look at the situation and think, how could they not be afraid? Because God had already laid out a plan. Because God had already set them out on a path. And because they were going to do exactly what God had instructed them to do. And just like Moses said, the Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. God would save. God would bring total victory. Our God is a victorious God. Our God does not lead us to a place where He will not help us. The old quote says, where God guides, God provides. Where God leads, God takes care of every possibility, and God directs all of our steps, and God provides exactly where He desires so that He could get the honor and the glory. Now, as we follow God's path, remember He has a perfect plan. Remember, this is the acceptable and perfect will of God. Remember Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to them that love God and them that are called according to His purpose. God is not changed. God's the unchangeable one. God cannot lie. And if God has a plan for us, and if God has some steps of faith that He's leading you to take, then He is not going to lead you somewhere that is going to destroy you. God is not going to lead you into something that you can't handle. God is going to lead you to a place where you're going to have to trust on God, even if it doesn't make sense, even if you don't understand it. But God will get the victory. You know, lastly tonight, focus on the triumph and not the trouble. God is a God of victory, not trouble. God is a God who leads to a place and to a path of total and complete victory and success, even if it doesn't look like it in our eyes. God does not lose. John 16:33 says, "These things have I spoken unto you, that ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Psalm 108:13 says, "Through God we shall do valiantly, for He it is that shall tread down our enemies." 1 Corinthians 15:57, one of my favorite verses, it says, "But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ." You probably heard that saying that says, "I read the end of the Bible and God wins." In Revelation in chapter 12 and verse 10, it says, "I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of His Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night." At the end, God gets the victory. Why? Because our God does not fail. They sing the old kids song, you know, God can do anything. God can do anything, anything. God can do anything but fail. Our God is a victorious God. And I have no doubt as the Egyptians were looking around, or as the Israelites were looking around, they're like, "Yeah, God, I don't know how you're going to get us out of this one." But I hope there were some Israelites there who thought, you know what, if God set us free from Egypt with all those plagues, then God's going to set us free again. Hey, if God let us out of Egypt for a reason to head toward the promised land, then God's going to ensure that this step of faith is successful. And how did God do it? Look at verse number 19. The first way of God getting the complete triumph or God getting the victory is that God was working even when they did not see. Verse 19. "And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them. But it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all night." Verse 21 continues, "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left." In that first part, it talks about how God removed the pillar of the cloud from before them. And He put it behind them, between them and the Egyptians. Why? So the Egyptians could not see them to follow. The Egyptians had a plan. What? Moses said, "Go forward." And as they take those steps, God was working in ways that they could not see. As a cloud went behind them, they couldn't see the Egyptians and the Egyptians couldn't see them. And God was causing the Egyptians to slow down. In a few verses we'll read in just a minute how the chariot wheels began to fall off, how God started to take care of the Egyptians little by little by little, and the Egyptians were no doubt probably running for their lives. They weren't looking back. Or the Israelites were running for their lives. They weren't looking back at the Egyptians. But God was working. You know, as we go forward by faith, sometimes it feels like, you know, God, I'm stepping out into an abyss. There's nothing there. But we don't see the path that God has prepared. We don't see the ways that God is working behind us. Sometimes we just don't see all the ways that God is working around us. But God is preparing the way for total triumph. Not only was God working where they could not see, but God was working in ways they could not understand. I'm sure as they were walking through the Red Sea and they saw the wall of water on one side and the wall of water on one side, and they started running and maybe the dirt kicked up into their sandals and they're like, "That's dry dirt." I bet they didn't understand it. I bet they didn't comprehend it. As they were running, maybe through the walls of the Red Sea, maybe running for their lives, and the Egyptians seemed to get further and further away. Maybe it didn't make sense to them. But that's the kind of God we serve. Well, you know, we don't have to see the answer. We don't have to see how God is working to be obedient to how He is leading. We know, of course, the story where the Israelites get to the other side of the Red Sea. And it was a miracle. God did separate the Red Sea. They didn't have a strip of land to walk on. They weren't wading through in their waist. No, God did a miracle. And as they got to the other side of the Red Sea, and they turned around, and that water came crashing down over the Egyptians. God got the victory. But you know what? They had to take some steps forward by faith. You know, they had to follow God's leading. Instead of looking at the circumstances, they were supposed to just look to God. I'm sure they could have saved themselves from a whole lot of anxiety, a whole lot of worry, a whole lot of stress, maybe some gray hairs, if they had just put their focus on the Lord. I want to close with the story. Maybe you've heard of David Gibbs, Dr. David Gibbs from Christian Law Association. Growing up, he had a church that he went to, and his mother was a very accomplished and a very esteemed pianist. She was there in the church, and she played the piano every week. She was very good at it. But one day, she contracted the terrible polio disease. And there she went to the hospital, and she was there for months. There for months and months, and David Gibbs, as a young boy, thought he was never going to see his mom again. Well, one day, after months, his mom came home. But her condition was pretty bad off. She was in a wheelchair just to the degree where they even had to strap her head up to the back of the wheelchair. And there she was, and they were there at home, and they were thankful that she had lived, but she was concerned that, you know what, now she had nothing to do. But she knew that God was leading her to do something. She knew that God was not done with her life, but that God had a plan. And so somehow God was leading her to pray for something to do. And as she was there in that condition, newly from the home, from the hospital, a pastor came to visit. I don't recall if it was their pastor, if it was a different pastor, came to visit. And she said, you know, Pastor, would you pray for me for one thing? That God would give me something to do. And the pastor looked at her and he said, probably one of the worst things that you could ever say. Said, Mrs. Gibbs, you just have to acknowledge that. No, God's probably done with you. He looked at her and he said those words. I can't believe he would say something like that. But she looked and she kindly, you know, said, okay. And he departed. Said, no, I'm just going to keep praying that God would give me something to do. And you think of a lady in that condition, you might think, no, there's no way that God would have something for her to do. And at a church, I don't know if they went to a different church or if there was a pastor from a different area or whatnot, but at this church she was going to, the pastor asked her if there's anything that he could pray for her about. She said, you know, Pastor, pray that God would give me something to do. The pastor looked at Mrs. Gibbs and said, no, would you teach kids Sunday school? She said, sure, I would love to teach Sunday school. She goes to Sunday school and she starts teaching, and there's two kids, David Gibbs and his sister. They're the only kids in Sunday school. And they're there, and she's, you know, she's joyful serving the Lord. She's joyful teaching Sunday school. God gave her something to do. But she knew that God wanted to do something bigger than that. So after a few months of it just being those two, she looked at David and said, no, David, we got to pick up some kids on a bus or something. We got to find a way to get some more kids here to our Sunday school class. Let's start praying about that. Let's pray. And their church didn't have a bus. So they began to pray. David Gibbs' moms, he said one day, come on, David, we're going to go to this bus company. We're going to ask them for a bus. David said, he told his mom, he's like, you know, Mom, I don't think they give away buses over there. So they got in the car, and David Gibbs had to help his mom get in the car, and so he helps her get in the car, and they take that trip. I don't know how old he was at this time, but they take that trip to the bus company, and they go, and they park outside this window, and as David Gibbs is helping his mom out of the car, he drops her. And she said he hurt her real bad. She was really hurt. And he's just frustrated. He's like, Mom, they don't give away buses anyways. You're hurt. Let's just go home. Well, there's no sense in doing this. We're not going to get a bus. And she said, no, David, we came to ask for a bus, and God's going to give us a bus. Let's go. So they go inside, and they go to this receptionist, and the receptionist greets them, and she says, you know, I'm here to ask for a bus. And she kind of laughs, maybe a little bit snickered. She says, we don't give away buses here. She says, well, is there somebody I can talk to? She calls, and the vice president comes strolling in, and she looks at him and says, hey, sir, can I ask you for something? We'd like a bus to pick up kids for Sunday school. Bring some kids to church. And he says, sorry, ma'am, but we don't give away buses around here. He said, okay, no problem, but before I leave, can I ask you one question? Do you own the buses? And he says, well, no, I don't, but I'm the vice president. And she says, well, then, of course you can't give me a bus. You don't own them. Is the owner here? And he calls the owner, and the owner happens to come down, come to the lobby, and the receptionist says, you know, they're here to ask for a bus. And he says, no, Mrs. Gibbs, I've heard you asking them for a bus, and I heard you're asking us for a bus. And he says, you know, unbeknownst to you, you parked outside of my window. And I saw you fall. And I saw you get back in that wheelchair. and I saw you coming here, and I want to let you know, the answer is no. But I've never seen somebody care so much about getting a bus. She looked at him, and rather boldly she said, well, God's going to be really disappointed that you didn't give us a bus. And he began to think about it. He says, all right, Mr. Gibbs, I'm going to make you a deal. I'll give you one bus for one Sunday, but who's going to drive it? She says, well, I didn't think about that. I guess you'll have to give me a driver too. And he chuckles and he says, well, for one Sunday, I'm going to give you one bus and one bus driver. She says, well, sir, God really wanted me to ask for three buses because there's three different parts of town. And so we got to pick up three different neighborhoods. So can you give us three buses, three bus drivers? The owner, maybe a little bit grudgingly, says, fine, I'll give you three buses and three bus drivers for one Sunday. But you better make sure God knows about this. She laughed and said, okay, of course, I'll pray and I'll let the Lord know. And the owner kept his word. He gave her three buses, three drivers for one Sunday. And as Brother Gibbs tells the story, he says, because the next week he gave us four buses and four drivers. And it increased and increased and increased. The point where they're picking up 5,000 kids for Sunday school. To where the owner was giving them 40 buses to pick up kids for church. Because that one lady went forward by faith. A few months later, the owner wrote Mrs. Gibbs a letter. He said, I just want to thank you for coming in that one day and asking me for a bus. Because of you, my entire family's ridden that bus, gone to church, and got saved. Because of you and you asking for that bus, most of the people in my company are saved. And for years and years and years, that Sunday school class began to grow and grow and grow. It began to pick up kids, all entirely free for those buses and those bus drivers that man supplied. You know, that story is not about Mrs. Gibbs. That story is not about David Gibbs. That story is about a big God who, when we follow His path, going forward by faith, when it seems like there's nowhere else to go, that God gets the total victory. As we bow our head and close our eyes, as